the end of last time, I told you about the traditional notion of non-contextuality, which is that if you have two projective measurements which share some projector in common, so the example I gave was two tripods that shared an element in common, then a deterministic hidden variable theory should assign the same value to this common projector regardless of which tripod it finds itself part of. And then I showed that from that you get a contradiction. That's known as the Bell-Cushion-Specker theorem. So there are a few problems with this traditional definition in my mind. The first is that it applies only to sharp measurements. So it relied on the measurements being projective. And so we saw earlier in the course that there are also these POVM measurements. And so it's unclear how would you generalize the notion of a non-contextual hidden variable model to these generalized measurements. Also, it applied only to deterministic hidden variable models. So it postulated that these projective measurements were assigned definite outcomes by the hidden variables. So there was no possibility that the hidden variables might only specify the probabilities of the outcomes of a projective measurement. And furthermore, it didn't take into account the possibility that your hidden variable model might be objectively indeterministic. Whereas when we talked about Bell's theorem, you had an allowance for objective indeterminism, and you still found a contradiction with locality. And then the third objection is that the way it's defined is catered to quantum theory. So it refers to projectors that are common to two projected valued measures. And that's in contrast to what we had with Bell's theorem, where the definition of local causality had nothing to do with quantum mechanics. It just said, for any theory, it is locally causal if these conditions apply. So you might wonder, is there a notion of non-contextuality which I could apply to any theory that was defined independently of the quantum formalism? And that way, if in the future quantum theory turns out to be wrong and we have some other theory, one can always ask, OK, is that theory contextual or non-contextual? Yes?
Sorry for a stupid question, but can you just recap for us what is non-contextuality?
Yes, so the idea was that every projector receives a value from the hidden variables. And the value it receives is independent of the context in which it is measured. So a projector can appear in two projector valued measures, like this, for example, and its value should be independent of that. So the other reason you would want a theory independent notion of non-contextuality, or at least one that applies to a large class of theories, is that then you can genuinely do experiments. So we do experiments in the lab to test whether the world admits of a locally causal model or not. And what we're really doing is we're saying, look, there's a set of theories of the world that are locally causal, and they make certain kinds of predictions about what correlations are allowed. And then there's another set of theories, including quantum theory, which make other sorts of predictions. And we want to know what set of theories are we part of. And those experiments now tell us that even if quantum theory is wrong, we know that any other theory will have to be in this set here, which fails to be locally causal. So it'd be nice to have a similar notion of non-contextuality, where you could say of a class of theories, which ones are non-contextual, which ones are contextual. So a better notion would tell you whether any given theory admits of a non-contextual model, and whether any given experimental data can be explained by a non-contextual model. And then you can also ask questions like, just as non-locality has been found to be useful for certain information processing tasks, is contextuality the aspect of quantum mechanics that might power certain things in quantum information theory? And there's some recent results that are promising in that direction. And just interesting speculation, it's conceivable that the power of quantum computation might have something to do with non-locality or contextuality. So that's just to motivate you. All right, so this is refresher slide on operational quantum mechanics. So remember, the idea was that density operators represent preparation procedures, lists of instructions what to do in the lab. POVMs represent measurement procedures. And the algorithm just says, you know, the probability of getting outcome K and measurement M given preparation P is given by the Born rule. What you saw during Lucien's guest lecture is that you can have a more general kind of theory than quantum mechanics. And the formalism he used to represent preparations were what he calls P vectors, which live in some real vector space. And there were R vectors corresponding to the outcomes of a measurement. And the probabilities were just given by an inner product rule. So I presume he said something about that during his lecture. And so any theory that has some minimal structure, like it's closed under convex combination, can be written in this sort of form. You can give it a formalism, and you can talk about its predictions. And so we'd like a notion of contextuality that might apply to these kinds of theories as well. So here's what a realist model of an operational theory looks like. And we've been over this once before, so I'll say it again. The idea is that when you have a preparation procedure, you're actually preparing a system that has some properties. And if you know the list of instructions, then maybe you only know limited amounts about the ontic state, the full specification of the properties. So you have some distribution over the space of ontic states associated with that preparation. So I write mu sub p for the preparation. And for a measurement, you have a set of indicator functions. So for every ontic state, it tells you, OK, over here, you'll definitely get outcome one. You have probability zero of getting the other two. Over here, you have some probability of getting outcome one, some probability of getting outcome two. So these are all positive, and they sum up to one for every lambda. I call these the indicator functions. And importantly, the most general thing would be functions that aren't one or zero everywhere, but that can take arbitrary values between 0 and 1. And of course, this is how you reproduce the probabilities in that kind of model. So this is a realist or ontological model of this operational theory, the one that tells you that the probabilities of outcome k are this. And so this is what it is to provide an ontological model of any operational theory, not just quantum theory. OK, so now what's the definition of a non-contextual ontological model going to be? Or realist model. Well, here's the heuristic definition, just to give you the flavor. So operational equivalence of two experimental procedures will imply equivalent representations in the realist model. So what do I mean by operational equivalence of two procedures? So here's the idea. Suppose you have a whole battery of preparation procedures, different things you might do in the lab, and a whole bunch of measurements you might do. Okay. So think of these as loosely all the preparations and measurements for some kind of system. So for example, the preparations of a spin a half particle and the measurements on that spin a half particle. So you can now start defining equivalence classes. So suppose you take you take one of those preparations, you put it in front of each of these measurements, and you calculate the statistics for the measurement outcomes. And then you take the other procedure, and you put it in front of each of these as well. And you find in each case, this one gives exactly the same statistics as this one. So no measurement that you have can tell the difference between these guys. So think of them as black boxes. Maybe they have different devices on the inside, but you can't tell the difference because none of your measurements give any different statistics for one box than the other. That's what I mean by operational equivalence. From the perspective of your statistics, you can't tell them apart. So you can classify all of these guys into equivalence classes based on this notion of equivalence. And so the definition is just that P is equivalent to P prime if for all measurements and for all outcomes of each measurement, the probability of getting outcome K given that measurement and procedure P is the same as the probability of K given that measurement and P prime. So you can't tell them apart. OK. These are different equivalence classes. The remaining differences between procedures, between this one and this one, for example, I'll call a difference of context. So we've seen examples of this before in the course. But let me give you a trivial example for you. Suppose I do a Stern-Gerlach filtering type preparation. And in one case, I paint my magnets red. In the other case, I paint my magnets blue. And I find, hey, that didn't make any difference to the future statistics. Well, that's a difference of context. You know, what I had for breakfast that morning is a difference of context. These are differences that typically make no difference, and we don't expect them to. But there are more interesting differences of context that don't so obviously have that are non-trivial, let's just say. So let's look at quantum theory. Everything I've said is generic to an operational theory, but let's look at quantum theory. In quantum theory, differences of equivalence classes are represented by density operators. density operators tell you the statistics for all possible measurements. So if I say that these guys and these guys give different statistics for at least one measurement, then it means that they're represented by different density operators. But a difference of context is something like this. We saw that a mixture of Z spin up and Z spin down, equal mixture, was the same density operator as an equal mixture of X spin up and X spin down. And what that means is that no matter what measurement you do, if I put my one preparation in a black box, put the other preparation in a black box, there's no way for you to tell which is which. You can do all the measurements you like, you won't tell those two mixtures apart. So that is a difference of context. Different pure state ensembles that yield the same statistics for all measurements. Can anyone think of another difference of context for preparations? Yes. Yep. If you did, there's lots of ways of decomposing identity into 3 points. Others? Say something that's not a difference of two different ensembles of states that give the same mixed state. Are there other ways of getting a mixed state? Sorry, Aaron. Yeah.
So this is a little. I'm still thinking. Yep. You might expect that, like in the general way to produce a mixed state is to like produce a pure state on some system, and then split the system into like a thing and the unsolid.
Yeah.
Forget about the unsolid.
Yeah.
So there might be many different ways to do this.
Here's an example. So here's an entangled state between two two-level systems. Here's another entangled state between two two-level systems. They're different. And now I trace over the second system, system B. And it turns out that for both those guys, if you trace over B, you get identity over 2. You get exactly the same mixed state for both. And we didn't, I guess, go into this in detail in the first week, but for every mixed state, not only are there many pure state decompositions, there are many purifications. There are many bipartite states that all reduce to that density operator. So you could also say, well, those are very different procedures, right? So here I do one kind of thing, here I do another kind of thing, and then I ignore half. Very different procedures. You might expect that they could make some difference, but in quantum theory, they don't. So preparing one or another in a box, you won't be able to tell the difference when you do the measurements. Yes?
So you're saying that two preparation procedures differ only by context.
Yes. That's correct.
Is that a definition of peculiar quantum?
No. So the definition again was two. So for any theory, I can define equivalence classes with respect to the measurements. Don't need quantum theory for that. And then I say, right, if two objects are in the same equivalence class, and yet they involve doing different things in the lab, then I say those different things in the lab are just called differences of context. That's right. Well, exactly. By definition, the operational predictions are independent of context. What we're going to explore is whether the representation in our ontological model will depend on the context. Good. So this is the point. In addition to specifying statistics for measurements, if we're contemplating a realist theory, we associate something else with these preparation procedures, namely a distribution over the ontic states of our realist model. A preparation non-contextual model is one wherein if two things differ only in context, then they're represented by exactly the same distribution over the ontic states. A preparation non-contextual model. So it's non-contextual for the preparation procedures. Same distribution. If it's preparation contextual, so this means context dependent as opposed to context independent, then it means that even though these guys generate the same statistics for all those measurements, nonetheless, in the realist model, they're going to be represented by different distributions. So you might say, well, how can that be? If they're represented by different distributions in the realist model, how could they yield the same statistics for all measurement outcomes? And the answer is that the indicator functions for the measurements might be of a limited sort, right? So there might be no measurement that tells you exactly what the ontic state is. It might be that all your measurements are kind of fuzzy and coarse-grained, and it may be that these differences get washed out by the actual indicator functions that you can implement. And so you can't see this difference here. So there's no necessity to having a non-contextual model. The fact that the statistics are the same doesn't imply that the representation in the realist model has to be the same, but it's a very natural thing to assume. You know, it's an inference to the best explanation. Why is it that there's no measurement that'll tell them apart? Well, because they're preparing exactly the same distribution. If that were true, then clearly no measurement would tell them apart. So it seems like a reasonable assumption to start with. So here's the definition of a preparation non-contextual model. If two procedures, P and P prime, are operationally equivalent, and this was the definition of operational equivalence, which should be a for all k as well, then the probability of ontic state lambda given P is the same as the probability of ontic state lambda given P prime. OK, let's look at an example of the difference for some simple models. So here I want to assume not all of quantum theory for a two-level system, but just part of it. So consider these four pure states on the Bloch sphere. So Z spin eigenstates, X spin eigenstates, and the completely mixed state. So it turns out that if you're only interested in these kinds of preparations and measurements, right, Z spin and X spin measurements, only those and not the rest, there's a very simple hidden variable model. It's a discrete analog of the Liouville mechanics with an epistemic restriction that I told you about earlier. So the idea is that there are just four ontic states, and those two quantum states are represented by uniform distributions over the first two or the second two. These two quantum states are represented by uniform distributions over the first and third, second and fourth. And the orthogonality relations are what you expect, right? So the overlap of the probability distributions of one of these guys and one of those guys is a half, just like the modulus squared of the overlap of these guys is a half. And those two are completely disjoint, just as these are orthogonal, and so on. And if you add those two with equal weights, you get the uniform distribution over all four ontic states. And so that's your representation for the first ensemble. This is how you represent equal mixture of the 0 and the 1 eigenstates within this model. And an equal mixture of the plus and the minus states is represented in exactly the same way. So within this model, you say, well, why can't I tell this mixture from this mixture? Because they're exactly the same distribution. So clearly, there's no measurement that'll tell them apart. You know, you're basically asking, you know, did I sample from one of these guys, or did I sample from one of those guys? Well, together, that just corresponds to sampling from a uniform distribution. Now, what about this model? So this is the Cochin-Specker model. So we saw that we have these cosine distributions in an individual hemisphere. So that's the zero, the representation of the zero state, the one state, the plus, and the minus. And now if you take an equal mixture of these guys, you get something that's doubly lobed around the east and the west points, and something here that's doubly lobed around the north and the south pole. And so clearly, you have different representations of the completely mixed state depending on which ensemble you look at. So therefore, the Cochin-Specker model is considered to be preparation contextual. Why is it that you can't tell this difference? Well, if you look at, remember how measurements worked in that model, they just asked, is the ontic state in this hemisphere, or is it in the opposite hemisphere? And those were all your projective measurements. So if you ask, well, how much weight does this distribution assign to any given hemisphere, it turns out to be exactly the same as the weight assigned by this distribution to a given hemisphere. So those limited sets of measurements aren't able to distinguish those guys. And that's why the completely mixed state looks the same for those measurements. Yes?
So the distribution, you get a peak at 2 and a half. Sorry? You say that if you add half of this distribution, you have something like this uniform distribution, you add that, and this one.
This one and this one?
The parameter and the last
one. Oh, these two. No, sorry, over here.
Yeah, if you add these two.
This one and this one, yeah.
You realize that I expect to have a peak somewhere between the middle.
You expect to have a peak at one of these four states?
Yeah, in the middle of one of these four
states. Why? Do you expect that?
If I look at the distribution.
Yes?
Midway between 2 and 3.
Midway between 2 and 3. Do you mean the second and third row? Or do you mean the second and third?
Show
me.
What I'm trying to say is, if I want to get from this distribution to get distribution,
yes.
need really another piece.
On the boundary.
Well, it depends how you define this boundary, right?
So actually, maybe this is a bit misleading. I mean, this is you shouldn't think of this as a continuous variable and sort of flat distributions here. This is really just a histogram. So it's, you know, all I'm really saying is that those distributions are like a half, zero, 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 a half, zero, a half, zero, and zero, a half, zero, a half. Okay, so it's just a probability, a discrete probability distribution over four elements. And then it's clear that if I sum these guys up with probability a half each, I just get, you know, a quarter all the way across. And similarly with these two guys. So yeah, I apologize that that wasn't clear. Yeah, it's funny because here I'm using the symbol lambda to denote a continuous variable over here and a discrete variable over here. And this little arrow is very misleading. So thanks for that clarification. OK, so that's the difference between preparation non-contextual and preparation contextual models. Now let's talk about measurement contextuality. So we can do a similar thing. We can say, take all those measurement procedures and organize them into equivalence classes. Two measurements are equivalent if they give the same statistics for all my possible preparation procedures. So I've just sorted them into equivalence classes. And then whatever's left over, whatever differences in measurement procedure don't correspond to differences in statistics, I call a difference of context, measurement context. So examples from quantum theory. If I have, for example, two projector valued measures where I coarse grain over these two outcomes. So I'm really just measuring this projector versus the rank two projector orthogonal to it. Well, then it doesn't matter if I first measure psi 1 versus psi 2 versus psi 3 and coarse grain, or psi 1 versus psi 2 prime and psi 3 prime and then coarse grain. At the end of the day, I'm just asking, is it psi 1 or orthogonal to psi 1? And both those procedures give exactly the same statistics. Yes?
Well, never mind. You just answered in the last part.
Good. So here's what it looks like in non-geometrically, just in terms of the formalism. I have two projectors describing this measurement, projector on psi 1 and identity minus that projector. And the identity minus projector is the coarse graining of psi 2 projector and psi 3 projector. And over here, it's exactly the same projected valued measure. It's just that identity minus psi 1 is considered a coarse graining of a different thing. So what you do in the lab is different, but you don't see that difference in your statistics. OK, here's another example. So these are meant to be geometric representations of POVM. So you remember how every POVM element, which was a positive operator, or a set of positive operators that sum to identity, that's a POVM. If I divide all those guys by 2, it's a set of positive operators that sum to identity over 2, which is a resolution of the completely mixed state for a qubit. So during that lecture, we pointed out that you can have a noisy measurement of spin along this axis by mixing a pure measurement of spin along that axis with a trivial measurement that just flips a coin, identity over 2, identity over 2. And then later in that lecture, I showed that there's another way of doing that same measurement, which is you measure the 0, 1 basis with probability half, the plus minus basis with probability half. You keep track of which one you've done. That's a four-element POVM like that. And then you can coarse grain these two guys and coarse grain those two guys and get just this pair of POVM elements. So those are very different things. But ultimately, they're represented by E identity minus E, both of them. They're exactly the same pair of elements. And it's just that E is constructed in a slightly different way. All the statistics of these two guys are exactly the same. No matter what preparation procedure I choose, I can't tell them apart. So this is another difference purely of context. And again, you might say, well, the best explanation of why you can't tell them apart by any preparation procedure is that they're measuring exactly the same thing. So they're represented by precisely the same set of indicator functions, both of them. Because there's two outcomes, there's two indicator functions for these guys. But if it's, so that's a measurement non-contextual model. If they're represented by different sets of indicator functions, then it's measurement contextual. The representation depends on your choice of context. So again, here you'd say, well, how could it be that they're represented by different indicator functions if they gave the same statistics? Answer, well, you might not have arbitrary probability distributions that you can prepare. You might not be able to, if you could prepare a delta function on the ontic states, then clearly you could tell these guys from these guys apart by preparing a delta function, say, here. They're very different here. But if you can't, if all your distributions are, say, very smoothed out, then maybe you get precisely the same statistics for those two guys. All right, so that's preparation non-contextuality, measurement non-contextuality. Universal non-contextuality would be non-contextuality for both of them. And this is sort of reasonable. I think the two assumptions are clearly on the same footing. It's not clear why you would say, you know, you should have one but not the other. It seems like they're equally reasonable. So you'd expect to have both of them, or you would just give up on either. And now I'm going to show you that you can't have this in quantum theory. So far, it's been a completely general definition. You could ask for any operational theory. Does it admit of a universally non-contextual model? And now we're going to see that quantum theory, considered as an operational theory, does not. All right, and it's going to be a proof based on preparations and the notion of preparation non-contextuality. All right, so I'm launching into it. So maybe before I launch into it, are there any questions about the definitions of non-contextuality? Yes?
Would we be allowed then to talk about something where the object state is sought, because we've only been, because there, non-contextuality would seem to mean that, contextuality would seem to mean that if we have two different density operators, if we have the same density operator that we got in two different ways,
yes,
that they would do two different things, but we're still saying the object state is...
Let me consider that case. I'll go back to this slide here.
Yeah.
So suppose I had a fourth column, and it was the orthodox interpretation, the psi-complete interpretation. I said, what was the representation of these four operational states? The answer would be, you know, one would be a delta function at the top of the block sphere, the other would be a delta function at the bottom, delta function left, delta function right. And then if I took the two mixtures, it would look like this. I would have a doubly peaked thing here, and this one would be doubly peaked here. And yet, none of my measurements would be able to tell those two guys apart. So the orthodox interpretation is preparation and contextual.
So the density operators are not a complete description of a psi-ontic, psi-complete model?
So they are, sort of by definition, they're the complete description of reality. But what's always confusing about these psi-orthodox models is that the pure quantum states are playing two roles. So in other models, you can make this clean distinction between, if you're talking about the quantum state, you're referring to a preparation procedure. And if you're talking about a distribution over ontic states, you're referring to how it's modeled in the realist theory. Now, when you get to the orthodox theory, that distinction sort of blurs. The quantum state, the space of ontic states of your model is precisely the same as your space of operational states. And so you say, well, how do I represent this operational state in my model? Oh, it's a delta function at this point on a sphere. So hopefully those comments clarified how you would ask this question for the orthodox model. So you draw another column. You say, here are the delta functions for these guys. We're now thinking of those as the representation in the realist model of these procedures. And we ask, is it the case that in that realist model, a mixture of representations of the 0 ket and the 1 ket is the same as a mixture of representations of the plus ket and the minus ket? And the answer is no, they're very different. And so it's in the psi-complete orthodox interpretation, the reason you can't tell the difference between a mixture of 0 and 1 and a mixture of plus and minus is not, oh, they're the same distribution over some reality. It's just, no, they're totally different realities, totally different things. but for some reason your measurements just are incapable of seeing that difference.
But then how come they still have the same, well, I'll later, sorry, I don't mean to stop.
It's okay. I mean, they have the same density operator because all the density operator tells you is what are the statistics of future measurements going to be. So if all measurements give the same statistics, they'll have the same density operator. I think it's important for this to be clear. So is there more confusion? Well, let's talk about it later. Maybe things will be clear. If you're confused about how to represent the psi orthodox or the orthodox interpretation, then don't worry about it for the moment and just think of hidden variable models and say, you know, what is it for a hidden variable model to be preparation non-contextual? So, yes?
Question you just clarified.
Oh, okay.
I should ask you another question, which is, I guess it's important not to put values on these terms, so there's nothing intrinsically bad about a non-contextual theory. It's just you should look at your theory and decide whether that's okay.
When you said there's nothing bad about a non-contextual theory, did you mean a contextual theory? So one where you're trying to say there's nothing intrinsically bad about having different representations?
Oh, sorry, that's what.
Yeah, that's what you meant. Well, I would say yes. You know, it's, you can do it. It's a less elegant theory than if you'd been able to achieve this. This would have been a very elegant theory. Beyond that, I think you can say the same thing that you said about Bell's theorem. Right? So in Bell's theorem, we said, well, what's mysterious here? It's the fact that there exist superluminal causes. We need them to explain the correlations. And yet, I can't use those to signal. And so similarly, in a contextual model, you'd say, look, according to our realist model, there really is a difference between these two measurement procedures. So why is it that I can't see that difference operationally? Why isn't there some preparation that can tell them apart? So it's a similar kind of mystery. There's a difference, but it's washed out somehow in the statistics. And that seems a little bit conspiratorial, just as it did in Bell's theorem, a cause which gets washed out somehow. So that's the same idea. OK, so here's our first proof. So remember, different procedures are going to be associated with different distributions over ontic states. And here I'm placing no restriction on the ontic state space. Here we're saying, for any realist model, there just will be some ontic state space. I'm representing it by a line, but it could be anything you want. And now, OK, I need to set up a few lemmas first. So suppose that you have two preparation procedures that are one-shot distinguishable, meaning I prepare a system from using one or another, and I just give you one copy of that system. And it turns out that there's a measurement you can do that can retrodict which of the two preparations I implemented. Okay, so in quantum mechanics, for example, if I prepare one of two orthogonal states, they're one-shot distinguishable. With one measurement, you can tell them apart. So the way you have to represent that in a realist model is by distributions that don't overlap, those kinds of distributions. And the proof is by contradiction. Suppose the distributions did overlap. Well, then I would have sampled my ontic state from this guy or this guy, and sometimes it would come out here. But then it's clear that no measurement could possibly tell them apart, because these ontic states are consistent with both preparations. So it has to be that they're orthogonal. The second assumption is how you represent convex combination, i.e. mixtures, in an arbitrary realist model of an operational theory. So if P double prime is a procedure which basically is a black box wherein you implement P with probability little p and P prime with probability 1 minus p, then clearly this is how you ought to represent it in your realist model. And the reason is you're asking, what's the probability of ontic state lambda given that I did this, P double prime? Well, clearly that's just going to be the probability of lambda given that you did P times the probability you did P. So this is the probability of lambda given that you did P. This is, you multiply that by probability little p times the probability of lambda given P prime multiplied by the probability you did P prime. So that is clear. It has to have to represent mixtures that way. So these are the critical background assumptions. Are there any objections to these? Can anyone see reasons why you wouldn't want to believe this. Because ultimately, we're going to get to a contradiction. So we want to know that all our other assumptions, the assumptions that weren't the non-contextuality assumption, are solid. So is it clear that these are watertight assumptions? The last one, you can question.
How would you do it?
I can think of one way of questioning the last one. But it amounts, but to overcome the objection, all I have to do is appeal to non-contextuality. So let me specify. Suppose it was the case that the distribution over lambdas you get by implementing the preparation P was not the same as the distribution over ontic states I get by doing something slightly different. I do P preceded by a coin flip. Why should flipping this coin have anything to do with how this preparation procedure operates? Well, maybe it does. Maybe this coin flip over here makes a difference to how this procedure works, and it gives a slightly different distribution when it follows after a coin flip. But that would be an assumption of contextuality, because if I look at the statistics of measurements, I find that preparing P gives certain statistics. Preparing P preceded by a coin flip gives exactly the same statistics. So if you assume that there was a difference in how you represent this guy with a coin flip or without, you'd be assuming a difference that you couldn't see operationally, and so you'd already be assuming contextuality. Yes?
You mean a difference that you couldn't see operationally?
I mean that there would be, you would be assuming that there are two procedures which you're representing differently in your realist model, and yet no measurement procedure could tell them apart. So what I mean by that is, if I took those two procedures, put them in black boxes, and told you, do any measurement you like on the two, and try to figure out which black box has the first procedure and which black box has the second, you would fail. You'd say, well, all my measurements give exactly the same statistics on your two black boxes.
So exactly,
there's no operational difference. And the assumption of non-contextuality says, if there's no operational difference, then represent them exactly the same way in your realist model. So I'm just saying that if you're really skeptical of this one, you could just appeal to non-contextuality and say, well, clearly this ought to be true. Because whether I flip a coin before doing a preparation or just do the preparation, it should be represented the same way in the model.
Principally, you could write the last line as f of p and g of p, where f plus g is equal to 1. But you say if that's different from the actual probability, that's
I didn't quite get your example. F of P, what's F?
So instead of P at 1 minus P.
Yes.
Let's write some arbitrary
function. Oh, I see.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
But that's not the actual probability that you combine the events. That's only by virtue of some contextual.
I don't think you can modify that aspect. I was thinking that you would allow that distribution over lambda to change. But I think what I'm saying here is I'm just using Bayes' rule. I'm saying the probability of lambda, given that I implemented p double prime, should be the probability of lambda given that I implemented p times the probability of capital P given that I times the probability of capital P times the probability of lambda given p double prime times the probability of p double prime. So this is my little p, this is my 1 minus p, and that's it. So I think that's solid. Okay, let me continue with proof. So the proof makes use of 6 pure states. Here they are on a plane of the Bloch sphere. I call them little a, big A. So little a, big A are antipodal on the Bloch sphere. That means they're orthogonal. That's just 1, 0, 0, 1. I have little b and big B, those two states there. They're just separated by 120 degrees from little a. And I have little c and big C, which is 120 degrees, little c is 120 degrees from little b on the Bloch sphere. And so those are the vectors. They're 3 orthogonal pairs. And now, I imagine that there's a preparation procedure for each of them. So I'm going to say, you know, here's something I can do in the lab, which will correspond to those 6 states. OK, I can also represent them by density matrices if I want. So all I've done here is take each of these and take the outer product of the vector with itself, and I get these 6 density matrices. And the reason I do this is because orthogonality looks particularly nice for density operators. It's just that the product has to be zero. So that should be obvious. If I take the outer product of psi times the outer product of a state perpendicular to psi, well, this is just a scalar, and it's zero. So that product has to be zero. So it's just another way of writing orthogonality. OK, and now, because these two preparation procedures are distinguishable with certainty, right? They're orthogonal quantum states, so there's some measurement that can distinguish them in one shot. And these guys are one-shot distinguishable, and these guys are one-shot distinguishable. The way I represent them in my realist model must be by distributions that don't overlap. That's the assumption we saw earlier. It's the only way I can explain the fact that there's a measurement that can tell them apart with certainty. So now I know something about the representation of those six procedures. OK, now I'm going to define some mixtures of those guys. So here are some new procedures. The first one, which I'll just call P little a big A, is an equal mixture of P little a and P big A. So it's a black box inside which a fair coin is tossed, and then the P little a procedure is done if heads comes up, and the P big A procedure is done if tails comes up. That's it. That's what the first one is. And similarly for little b and big B, little c and big C. And then these two guys are equal mixtures with a probability third for each of these guys. That's it. And now, again, because of that second assumption we talked about, the way you represent mixtures, it's clear that the probability of getting ontic state lambda, given that you did this procedure, little a big A, has to be the probability of getting lambda given that you did little a times a half plus the probability of getting lambda given that you did big A times a half. And similarly for all the other guys. OK. So what we know about those procedures' representations in quantum theory is the following. If I take an equal mixture of two antipodal points, I get the center of the box here. If I take an equal mixture of three points on an equilateral triangle, I also get the center of the block sphere. So all five of those mixtures I told you are just represented by the completely mixed state, identity over 2. That's just given by these equations here. So what that tells us is that these five procedures are operationally equivalent. There's no measurement you can find that will be able to tell which of these five is hiding inside a black box, because they're all represented by identity over 2. So this is where I use my assumption of preparation non-contextuality. I say, if they're operationally equivalent, then they ought to be represented exactly the same way in the realist model. So all five of these guys are equal, and I'll just set them equal to nu of lambda as the standard distribution. OK, so that tells me, because if you look at the last slide, I had five different distributions here. I now know that they're all the same. So, oops. So I just have these equations that have to be satisfied. All right, so this is what we need. We need to find seven distributions over some hidden variable space, ontic state space, such that the products of little a and big A are 0, little b and big B are 0, and so on, and such that they satisfy these mixtures relations. And it turns out no distributions can do this. You can derive a contradiction. Note that this just parallels the relationships that hold between the density operators. So something that can be obtained by positive operators can't be achieved for positive distributions. Okay, so that's the difference in the mathematics. We're trying to represent density operators with distributions, and it's going to fail. Yes? That's right. The quantum mechanics comes in the structure of the convex set of states. So it's like, you know, going back to Lucien's lecture and the end of my stuff on operationalism, a lot of the content of, you know, what is it for a world to be operationally quantum as opposed to operationally something else? It has to do with the shape of the operational state space. So that's where that's coming in. OK, so let's find the contradiction. So if you look at these three equations, and you take a particular ontic state, say lambda prime, then because of this relation here, I know that at any lambda prime, only one of these can be non-zero, and the other one has to be 0. So for a particular lambda prime, one of these two terms is 0. So suppose it's this guy, then at that lambda prime, I have mu little a equal to 0. But if it's this guy that's 0, then I know that mu little a is twice nu. Okay, so I know that at lambda prime, it's either 0 or twice nu. And similarly with mu little b and mu little c, either 0 or twice nu. But now if you look at the right-hand side of this guy here, it can only take certain values, right? Because I've constrained mu little a, mu little b, and mu little c. So if they're all 0, then the right-hand side is 0. If two of them are 0, or say two of them are 0 and one of them is twice nu, then I just get 2/3 nu. And if one of them is 0 and two of them are twice nu, then I get 4/3 nu. And finally, I could have all of them be twice nu, in which case I get 2 nu on the right-hand side. But none of those, these are the four possibilities, none of them is equal to nu. The only case where they'd be equal is if nu was 0, but I know that there's some state somewhere that has to be assigned non-zero probability by the completely mixed state. And so it can't be 0, so I get a contradiction. I'm done. So you can't have a preparation non-contextual model of quantum theory. Good. Questions about that? All right, let's move on to measurements. I've taken more time than I expected on the preparation, so I'm going to have to skip over some of the things I was going to say. So I want to contrast this new definition of measurement non-contextuality with the old one. So here was the old one. It said you should represent these projective measurements with indicator functions that are 1 or 0 everywhere. And you know, the same projector should be represented in the same way. Well, that's equivalent to saying that if I have these two kinds of things, and I coarse-grain psi 2, psi 3, or I coarse-grain psi 2 prime, psi 3 prime, the resulting measurements ought to be represented in the same way. So basically I'm saying this can also be said as if you coarse-grain these two guys, you get exactly the same set of indicator functions. Just a different way of saying the same thing. But here's the difference, that we've been allowing arbitrary indicator functions, not just ones that are 1 or 0 valued. So the traditional notion is really equivalent to this revised notion, together with the assumption that for projective measurements, at least, it's outcome deterministic. For every ontic state, the outcome is completely determined with certainty. So this is what the traditional notion becomes. And so the new definition is not a generalization of the traditional notion, but also a revision, because it says that we should treat sharp measurements differently. And now I want to argue that this is the right way of going, because the old notion combined two things. It combined determinism with the notion of independence of context. And that situation arose in the context of locality as well. So local determinism, which was the original, a definition of locality, asked whether the outcome of some measurement might depend on space-like separated events. Bell's definition of local causality, which was able to deal with objectively indeterministic theories, said instead, let's not ask about the actual outcome, but the probability of the outcome. Does it depend on space-like separated events? And so there's a similar move being made here. You're saying, don't ask, is the probability of outcome one dependent on the context, but ask, don't ask, is the outcome dependent, but rather is the probability of the outcome dependent. So that's what we have here. All right, so this new definition allows you to separate non-contextuality and determinism. And so if you get a contradiction, you could always blame determinism, right? So all the no-go theorems I talked about at the end of last time, you could say, well, we got a contradiction, but what was to blame was this assumption of determinism, not the assumption of non-contextuality. So it turns out, and I don't have time to prove this, that if you assume universal non-contextuality, then you can derive determinism for those sharp measurements. So something that was posited by the traditional approach, you can actually now derive by this new kind of non-contextuality. And so if you're assuming universal non-contextuality, then you can derive outcome determinism from preparation non-contextuality. And what you're left with over here is the traditional notion. So the traditional no-go theorems are instances of a no-go theorem for universal non-contextuality. But in addition to those traditional ones, you get lots of new proofs. So these proofs in two dimensions, for example. So let me give you one more proof and stop. It's very similar to the proof we saw, so it'll only take a minute to do. So it's a proof that's based on measurements, and it'll use POVMs. So I'll be able to do it entirely in a two-dimensional Hilbert space. OK, so very same structure. Now I'm imagining three measurements. So I'm just measuring the basis, little a, big A. So I think of that as two projectors, pi A and pi big A, or this basis or that basis. So those are my three projector-valued measures. I know that in quantum theory, these sum up, each of these pairs sums up to identity. And products of these guys are zero because they're orthogonal. OK, in the realist model, I will represent each of these three measurements by a pair of indicator functions over the ontic state space. And the definition of a set of indicator functions is a pair that sums to one at all lambda, because it says that for every lambda, some one of these two outcomes has to occur. Remember, this is the probability of getting outcome little a, given that the ontic state was lambda. So I have these three relations. And now I use the fact that all these non-contextual models are deterministic for projective measurements. And that tells me that the product has to be zero, because at every ontic state, one of these guys has to be one and the other guy has to be zero. Right? I have to get some outcome for each of these measurements. So that's just what I've said here. For every lambda, this pair has to be either 0, 1, or 1, 0. Right? Just telling me which of the two outcomes is going to occur. Clear so far? Not too fast?
Just nope. That last step there.
Step here?
Yeah.
Well, maybe think about it graphically, right? So the set of indicator functions, if I have something that is deterministic for projective measurements, will be a pair of flat indicator functions that sum to identity. So there's some region where definitely you'll get this outcome, some region where definitely you'll get that outcome. So at every lambda, one is zero, the other is one, or vice versa. And if I take the product of these two guys, I get zero. Good. Now, I do my trick again. I say, we're going to introduce one effective measurement, which is going to be a mixture of measurements. So it just says, implement one of those three measurements, those three bases, with probability 1/3 each. And then record only whether you got the first or second outcome. So throw away the information of which of these three measurements you did. So this, of course, is going to be represented by a POVM, the kind of thing we saw in the first week. And this is the POVM that represents it, right? So think of it in two steps. The first step would be you have a six-element POVM, which records both what the outcome of your random number generation was, an integer between 1 and 3, and after you did the associated measurement, which outcome you got. So you could have, you know, I generated random number 1, and I got the little a outcome. I generated random number 1, I got the big A outcome. And, you know, those two are represented by this guy and this guy. And I, sorry, this guy, this guy. And so on for the others. And then I coarse grain. I say, now I forget whether which of these three random numbers was generated. And I just record whether I got the little letter, the first outcome, or the big letter outcome. And so I have to sum up those projectors, because that's how you represent coarse graining. Yes?
Would that be the same thing as actually doing all the measurements and then coarse graining?
No, because you've only got one sample of the system. So I'm not giving you three samples of the system on which to do measurements. You've just got this one sample. So you can only do one of the three measurements. But you're allowed to choose which of those three measurements to do at random. And then if you want, you can forget which of the three measurements you did. But if another way of putting it is that I have in a black box, you know, a three-sided dice, which I roll to decide which of these three measurements is done. And the only thing that comes out of the black box is whether I got the little letter or the big letter outcome, but not which of the three measurements was done. So if you say, how would I represent that black box as a POVM? The answer is, you'd represent it this way. Yes? That's a good question. That'll be your homework assignment. Build a three-sided fence. Hint, it can be done with a six-sided fence. So the same reasoning applies in your realist model. You have, for each of those three measurements, a pair of indicator functions, chi little a and chi big A. And now if you looked at the case where you remembered which random number you generated, you just have a six-element set. And then I coarse grained, which is represented by summation of the indicator functions. So it's exactly the analogous thing to what happened in quantum theory. All right, we're almost there at the contradiction. First thing to note is that this POVM is just identity over 2, identity over 2, because of symmetry, right? Those three projectors, if I go back to the last slide, these three projectors form an equilateral triangle around identity. So if I sum them up, I get identity over 2. It's just like an equal mixture of those three states. So that's just the trivial POVM, the one that's equivalent to what? Another way of implementing the trivial POVM? Rolling a two-sided dice, exactly. Also can be done with a six-sided dice. Or flipping a coin. So we introduce another measurement. It's a completely different procedure, a completely different thing that you could do in the lab, which is this. You know, you have your black box, the particle comes in, you let it hit a brick. And then over here, you flip a coin, and you output what the outcome of the coin was. Statistically speaking, that black box behaves exactly the same as the other black box, which has one of the three measurements inside of it done. No difference at all, because no matter what you put in it, they give you a random number as the outcome. Now, how would you represent that in the realist model? So you have to have a set of indicator functions. A pair of indicator functions for each of the two outcomes. What should they look like?
Half everywhere.
For every ontic state that you might feed in, your outcome will be a half. So it's just a half everywhere here and a half everywhere there, completely independent of lambda. So that's just this, a half, the uniform function on both. Now, we use the assumption of non-contextuality, right? Which says these two measurement procedures are totally indistinguishable in the lab. Therefore, they ought to be represented in the same way in our realist model. So this set of indicator functions, two indicator functions, should be the same as this set of two indicator functions. This set equal to that set. And now we've got a problem, because remember, each one of these guys was 0 or 1. That's what we saw just back here, right? Each one everywhere has to be 0 or 1. And now that means that this term here, if all three are 0, it's 0. If 1 is 0 and 2 are 1, then it's 2/3 here. If 1 is if 2 are 0 and 1 is 1, then it's 1/3. And they could all be 1, in which case it's 1. And so that gives you all the possibilities. And none of them give you a half. And so you have your contradiction. Okay, so I'm going to end there. The moral of the story is that all those things we saw in the first week, where you had multiple ways of doing something operationally, two things that looked indistinguishable operationally, all of them can support these sorts of proofs that there are no non-contextual models. So if you want a realist model, then things that look the same operationally have to be represented differently in your model, which seems a bit mysterious, because you've got this tension. Let me finish there.